Blog Talk Radio.
Grind. Sell the drugs they sold to us and call it drug bust. Grab they money, double product, then they lock you up, it's fucked up. They stand they ground, you better bow on yours and tough luck. We start rebelling cause they failed us, man, enough's enough. We bring a pistol, they got keys. We got rocks, they got grenades. Waving tanks all in your face. Ha. Look at what you made. You're trying to send the mud, then get mad when we decayed and enraged. We play this old game since we was raised. Until we load the cartridge, blow that dust up in your face. Ha. Yeah, this shit is bad, dog. Under five black skin and got us blackballed. Yeah, this shit is fucked up. No more cry, time to ride if they act up.
Vest on and they pumped up and they ready to go. If you jumped up in that lid, fuck what you did, bruh. Your wife is crazy, your kids crying. Heard what they said, toss your shit off on that float with that pistol up on your head. Them fuck boys running straight to your stash, like in that closet, under that bed, grabbing your kids and copping your bread. Ain't re-up, niggas ain't find shit, Lord. Somebody tell them, these niggas know too much. Point out them sucker niggas ducking, probably owe too much. Now wifey caught a kiss, your baby fucking scar. Trash in your house, these niggas claim it as they fucking job. Nah, asking questions, keep your calm, cause these sucker ass niggas hating hard.
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to another night of YBE Radio. Tonight I have Keith with me as my co-host. Hey, Keith, you there with me?
I'm here. Right, Keith, everybody, Keith.
Yes. How are you doing this evening, Keith?
I'm good. And yourself?
I'm good. Just finished working. Well, I'm still kind of supposed to be working, but, you know, I'm multitasking now. I logged in at 9:30 today, so I feel like I paid my dues for the day, so I'm going to go ahead and do something else, something a little bit more freeing and empowering, you know, for the time being. But I do thank you for joining me for another evening. We are missing our co-host, Shalice, tonight, so we want to send her love and peace and blessings, and she's dealing with some stuff, so then we know she's tired and gets some rest, so we want to, you know, shout out to Shalice.
Everything gets better.
Yes, we have a really, really exciting show for you guys today. We actually have Mashawn, who is the playwright and star of Power, Stokely Carmichael. So we are going to talk to him shortly about what's been going on, because this is actually will be the second time he's been here. So we're going to talk to him a little bit about what's been going on, because there's been a lot in the past couple of months since he's been away. And his show will also be coming back to D.C., so we want to tell you guys all about it. But before we get started, we got to, you know, do our usual topics and talk about a few things. So the first thing I kind of want to talk about, or Keith and I, we were discussing hot topics, was I wanted to say something about Orlando. Nothing too political. I don't really care what you believe, how you feel about it, whatever the case may be. People are people. I just pray that we can find peace within ourselves and be comfortable in who we are and where we are. Be happy living your people fucked up out here, whether you get it. Whether you trying to be black and empowered, whether you trying to be whatever the case may be, it's really a lot of people that are having trouble just living in the truth of what they are. And, you know, our government is calling this a terrorist attack. I don't know necessarily if I could call it that or if I necessarily agree with that, especially after all of the other things that they found, like this gentleman was, like, in the clubs and doing other things. But that's neither here nor there. I just want to pay respects to the families of the people that passed away in a very tragic attack in America. So that's really what I want to say about that.
Rest in peace, everybody in Orlando. I will say, I was speaking to one of my friends, and he was talking about, you know, still feeling like people are hateful towards, you know, homosexual people and all that. And he was talking about how even some of his friends, male friends, wouldn't feel comfortable hanging with him because of it. And it was something I understood where he was coming from, because, you know, at a young age, I had a friend who was gay, or I didn't know was gay, who turned out to be gay. And it was different for me as a youngin', but I will say that it's important for everyone to stop, you know, the shaming and the bullying, not just to gay people, because, I mean, a lot of times a gay man may not feel like, oh, I don't want to hang out with this dude because he's gay. It's just like, it's everything that comes with it, because people always say, well, you should be able to hang with a gay dude, it's no problem, until they would see you with one. Then automatically they judging you, telling you you gay. Well, these are the same people that tell you you need to, you know, appreciate and do all this other stuff. So it's like, you know, we all have to stop the shaming. It's not just shaming gay people. It's shaming people who are friends with them, mm-hmm. shaming people who are around them, and stop, you know, oh, wait, he hanging with that dude, he gay, so he must be gay, he down low. Or, you know, they got, you know, what type of dudes, you know, hang out with gay dudes. But then they be the same ones speaking equality. So we got to stop the shaming all around. You know what I'm saying? If you support the LGBT community, then support it all the way. Don't just do it when it's cute or it's fun or it's in time. Do it all the time. You know what I'm saying? So just stop that bullying even at an older age, because it's ridiculous. And it leads to stuff like this. So, yeah, that's all I had to say on that. And rest in peace to everybody in Orlando. You know, the families of the people who died and so on and so forth. So, yeah, what was the topic number two we were talking about? I know I wanted to speak about the animal attacks, because we haven't really spoken since then, I don't believe, that happened. Well, one, the kid that fell over the edge of the gorilla exhibit,
mm-hmm.
and then you have the alligator incident in Florida, and I think it's crazy. I think it's crazy, but I also, like, I felt it was kind of, like, disgusting the way they attacked the family of the child who fell into the gorilla pit and just really was looking to aim and find out, oh, well, they must be terrible people because, you know, so forth and so on. But then the alligator attack, I didn't see much coverage on that. I didn't see much coverage on the parents. You know what I'm saying? And then in that situation, a kid actually died. So it's kind of weird when you look at the media and how they portray things and how they go about things. Because it's like, you know, that kid shouldn't have been that close to the pond either. He shouldn't have been straying so far where, you know, that could happen. And accidents happen all around. So if we're going to judge one situation, we have to judge the other situation as equally. So I'm just, it really grabs my gaze when they start getting into digging for too much information about people when stuff like this happens. I don't know. It's just
I mean, I definitely agree with you. I actually kind of had got into, like, this debate with this young lady on, like, another friend's status, because he's also a young black man about our age, you know, just discussing it, kind of, you know, verbalizing what you said and, you know, the thoughts on it. And she kind of disagreed, and I kind of had to break it to her like this. Like, I have yet to see the news talk about these parents' history, if they have a police record, if they've ever gotten any trouble, if they've ever had any tickets, if they've ever been fired from any job. I mean, they was pulling up all types of things with the black parents at the zoo that had nothing to do with, you know what I'm saying, the situation at hand. For me, I feel like in both cases, the issue lies with the location of where they were at. My thing is, I don't care if a child is two and moves quickly. There should be no way a two-year-old should be able to get into an enclosure where there is a gorilla. The same way, if you are at a park or you're in Orlando and there are signs that say no swimming and wading, and you have these little tiny, it is not even no fence or nothing. At this point in time, I think it's, again, the responsibility of the resort to protect the people, because now the one thing that they are showing videos of for Orlando is these alligators been trying to, you know, do whatever. Like, there's this video, I believe, it's like a, you know, like the roller coaster type rides that are like the raft rides or whatever. And it's an alligator trying to climb up on, like, one of the rafts. And they're trying to shoot him down, and he gets back up on the raft. So, like, they're trying to get to land at some point, and you know that they're there. So I just feel like in both cases, it's the responsibility of the establishment to make sure their patrons are watched. You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand that things may happen and you may turn around, but at the end of the day, there should be no way a two-year-old for me can jump into a cage with a gorilla or into an enclosure with a gorilla, or should be waiting in waters where y'all know it's possible alligator.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, all around, everyone should be held accountable, but especially the organizations that's holding these animals. Like, I get that the enclosure with the gorilla was a little bit harder for that child to get over. So, and that it happens, but it's very rare. But the ponds where you know alligators can be, from what I understand, there were no signs that would be said too much. Like, it's like, come on, you gotta be more careful, and people have to educate themselves too. You got to know that when you're in Florida, yo, any little land of body of water, as small as it, as small as it can be, you can have alligators. Like, they don't call it gator country for nothing. You know what I'm saying? So you just have to be careful when you're going to these places and you're doing these things, and self-educate yourself on, you know, some things that you may not know, you know, because you're going to a different place. So,
I definitely agree. And I definitely, you know, rest in peace to that young boy who did lose his life. You know, that's unfortunate. However, I just, you know, wanted to put the emphasis on, we are definitely in this topic talking about how the media is the highlight of the differences in between both families, if you have kind of watched those cases. But I'm going to move on to the next last hot topic, because I do want to bring on Mashawn, in which I'm sure he'll have something to say about this hot topic anyway. So he'll be coming on shortly. But I do want to say, I want to talk about Juneteenth. A lot of you may know June 19th as Juneteenth. You may have seen Facebook statuses about it. You may have seen a tweet about it. You may have seen something. If you don't know what it is, I hope you Googled it. But if you didn't, I'm just going to kind of explain to everybody kind of what it is. So Juneteenth, as most of us call it, is June 19th, 1865, is when basically the slaves were freed in Texas. 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed by Abraham Lincoln. And as many of you do probably already know, the Emancipation Proclamation really wasn't to free the slaves. It was more of used as a tool. He has been quoted in saying, and this is not an exact quote, but basically he didn't really care if they were free or if they were enslaved. He was just trying to do what was best for his people and rock with and get the basically a popular vote. But Juneteenth is the day a lot of slaves, like I said, 2.5 years later, particularly in Texas, were for real freed after the Emancipation Proclamation. So I know there was a lot of celebrations in Philly. I want to definitely send a shout out to Leon and Ron that are always out there on the streets, and they definitely were repping at the Juneteenth parade in Philadelphia. And I would just like to say, it gets live in Philly because they done had the Malcolm X join, they done had the Juneteenth join, so we definitely won't have to maybe next year like organize some type of trip or something, because I would definitely love to go to one of these events or whatever. But Keith, did you have anything you wanted to say about Juneteenth?
No, but I would just tell people to educate themselves on it and try to go to some of these events. I saw there was an event here, and actually one of my boys hosted something here on the nation's capital this weekend past, but I think it was kind of under wraps because of Father's Day. It didn't really have much of a promotion But yeah, just seek out these events they're having and try to step out to them and, like you said, educate yourself and embrace it.
Yes, definitely, for sure. So with no further ado, I am going to bring in our amazing guest, Mishawn. As I stated before, he is the playwright and star of Power, Stokely Carmichael. Brother, are you on the line with us this evening?
Yes, yes, I'm here. How you doing, beloved?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Is that my brother in the background here talking?
Peace, brother. How are you?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good, man. Been too long. How was the trip to L.A.?
L.A. was wonderful. L.A. was wonderful. L.A. showed us so much love when we went out there for the Hollywood Fringe Festival. And it was our first time out to the West Coast as far as performing live. And we were actually the furthest traveled show, according to the organizers there. Everybody else pretty much from the West Coast. And so we were definitely representing D.C. out there, and they just loved what we were doing. They loved the show. They loved the message. We had reviewers come out, and they were just really, really moved. There was an organization that actually came out for our midnight showing. About 11 people showed up, a nice group of folks, you know, which is kind of unheard of out there in California, Hollywood. Going to see a play at midnight, that don't happen. You know, you go to the club, you know. You know what I mean? You go to a party, but you're not going to see a play. So they showed us so much love out there, and hopefully we'll be back real soon. Mm-hmm.
That's what's up. So when are you guys coming, bringing it back to D.C.?
Well, we're coming back to D.C. For the Capital Fringe Festival, and we'll be performing on July 9th. That's our opening night. And, at first, we weren't going to, bring the show back. We were actually going to, debut my new play called Spook. That's what I was getting prepared for, getting in my mind how I wanted it to be staged, and getting with my director. I was going to have the same director as before, Jennifer Knight, who did just awesome work on Power, Stokely Carmichael. And we were going to get together and direct this play. But, I was getting people emailing me and calling me and some other things, technical things, as far as Spook was concerned. I said, why not just bring Power back? I mean, this is the actual 50th anniversary of Black Power, 1966-2016. And I said, that would be a great idea. And people wanted it. People were asking me, are you going to bring it back? I didn't get a chance to see it last time. I heard a lot of great things. So we spoke to the organizers at the Capital Fringe, which is just awesome, man. I can't even speak. I would have to need 2 hours to sing their praises. And they said, no, yes, please bring that back. And so we're coming back July 9th. That's our opening night. That's a Saturday, July 9th, at the Capital Fringe Festival. And the tickets are actually on sale now. And you could go online and purchase those tickets at their website, and come on in and enjoy the ride. CapitalFringe.org, and that's where you can find the tickets. You go to our profile on our website, Power Stokely Carmichael. Purchase about 28 tickets, and bring all your family and friends to come see a little bit of history here. See the brother that they called Stokely Carmichael, who later became Kwame Ture. Come and see this young brother as he was during that period when he first uttered the battle cry, Black Power. When people come see this play, you're not going to sit here and have a nice lecture or a nice historical lecture. Some people were kind of shocked by that. I've seen many solo plays before in the past, and one thing that always kind of bothered me about some of them, I always felt like I was sitting down in class hearing a lecture instead of watching a performance. You know, I want to see a performance. I want to see what's happening in the moment with the character, and that's how I approached this play. You're going to see Stokely Carmichael, but I'm going to give you a chance to take a peek in the past and see what was going on with him, what was going on at that time, in that moment when they are having the standoff against the Mississippi State Police. You know, when you're in that type of situation and you've already had someone get shot at the beginning of your march, you're James Meredith. Okay, mm-hmm. You're not going to sit up here and spend your time saying, oh, yeah, guys, and you know, I was born here, and I was born here, and I went to school. That no, you're not, you know, you're going to tell your people, look, let's get ready, and you're going to deal with the situation the way it is at that time, and that's what you're going to get. You're also going to get a chance to see some of the other individuals, our brothers and sisters that Stokely and so many of our freedom fighters encountered during that period of, you know, freedom now onto Black Power. During the time where, you know, they're doing the sit-ins up until that very moment where they're doing this march against fear, okay, and registering our people to vote as they go along and having more and more people join the march. So the audience members are actually people that decided to join the march the last few days before the end of the march. So you're coming along on the journey, and I'm not going to waste my time telling you, and I was doing this, and No, I'm going to tell you, hey, you need to get prepared. You need to get ready, because you know what? You know, people die out here, and that's the reality of what our folks had to endure and deal with when they were part of those marches during those dark, dark days of the civil rights movement.
For sure. So I know that. And I probably at this time, since you now, this will be your third tour of the play, since you're now coming back to D.C., how do you feel like Stokely Carmichael or a.k.a. Kwame Ture would feel in 2016 if he were alive and seeing kind of what we're seeing? Like, I know, I mean, you are not him, but just kind of in what you know and becoming him, what do you feel like his thoughts would be of, you know, the kind of the situation of our people, the movement, you know, kind of everything that's going on today?
I think that he would like or admire movements that are taking place, such as the Black Lives Matter movement. Which, I mean, it's you say Black Lives Matter, that's like Black Power. So I think that he would applaud that. But I still think he would still jump up and down and tell us, brothers and sisters, organize, organize, organize. We have to be organized. And we're not there. And I sometimes scratch my head, and I'm just like, what is the problem? It seems to me, it's like we are so splintered in so many different. It's just so hard for us to organize, and the key to organization is being united. And for some reason, we just cannot get that together. And I think we can't get it together because I really don't think we know what our agenda should be. I really don't. I look at the whole idea with this whole this circus called the presidential election that's taking place, and it seems to me, you know, you correct me if I'm wrong, that the masses are not particularly excited about these two candidates. They don't feel that these candidates are really speaking for them, so to speak. And, you know, when you have people that you feel like not speaking for you, you got a pretty good idea that once they get in office, they're really not going to do anything for you. I mean, that's just something in your gut. So, you know, instead of being manipulated by media and letting media get in your head and feeding you propaganda and we swallow it, sometimes I think that we as a people need to step back, come together, unite, organize, and do like what the brother did. You know, they formed their own political party. I think that, you know, looking at Democratic Party and Republican parties, okay, those are great. But in a democracy, there shouldn't just be a two-party system. You know, we carry a lot of power when we vote, and we definitely carry a lot of power when we spend our money. And I think if we were able to get ourselves together, come together, unite, organize, form our own political party, you know, would we be able to produce our candidates? Yeah, the Green Party does that. All we have to do is just pool our resources together and put our man up there or our woman up there and see what happens. Just see what happens. I think at this point, 2016, black people really need to just start looking out for themselves. Every other group does that. Every other group, they really look out for themselves. Some groups really don't even care who becomes the president. That's how united they are. To them, it doesn't matter because the money is going to continue to flow in their community. They're still going to give each other jobs. They are still going to start their own businesses within their own community, within their own world. You know, they don't have to worry about hoping somebody will give them a job that's in some government agency. No, they're self-sufficient. They know what power, real power means. And I'm talking about the Asian community. I'm talking about the Jewish community. You know, they mm-hmm. know what that means. But for some reason, it just boggles my mind. We don't really know what it means. You can go on Facebook right now, and you may put up something that may be challenging to white supremacy, which in turn will also probably challenge the belief system of some of our brothers and sisters that have bought into white supremacy, okay? Some of us call them coons, okay? Some of us have called them, I've heard the term, Negro bed wenches, okay? I've heard that. And, you know, and you would see this huge attack on the brother or on the sister that put up just something to think about, and they'll beat him down. All on social media. Instead of maybe messaging him and saying, hey, brother, you know, what do you mean by that? I don't understand. Or even just having a clear, open dialogue. 9 times out of 10, if you read that feed, at some point an insult going to come towards that sister or going to come towards that brother that put that stuff up there. You know, and you don't find that in any other community. They may have differences of opinion, but they're not going to outright attack each other unless they're really putting up some evil, hateful, messages or saying on their feed. And I think the brother was saying something earlier. You were saying something about with the LGBT community about the bullying, and that's
the constant bullying.
We in our community. I have to talk about my community because that's the community that I love. That's the community I'm part of. That's the community I want to see rise to the top, be the best that it can be. Neely Fuller talks about this. Neely Fuller Jr. talks about how we kill each other every day, and we kill each other with our insults. We kill each other with our bullying. We kill each other with our tongue lashing of one another. And not only of one another, we'll do it all out in public. He called it, if I remember correctly, morning or elevator insults. So we go to work in the morning, you get on the elevator. You know, you see the white guys, hey, John, how you doing? Hey, Mark, what's going on? You get on there, maybe you're a little tired or whatever, and the brother, man, look at your ass. What you were doing last night? You know what I mean? You know? you can't say good morning, brother. How you doing? Good morning, king. Good morning, queen. You know, you say good morning, queen, to some sisters, not all. You say good morning, boy. You better go on. Yeah, you know I mean, we can't even be cordial towards one another. We have for this poison in us.
It's like you said earlier. There's too many divides into the mission, and it's like separate sections inside of the movement. So it's like, you know, okay, I'm black, I want black equality, but I'm a woman, so I want black woman equality, but wait, I'm gay, so I want black gay equality. Or I'm a young man, I need black young man equality. And it's like I had a conversation with someone before, and I told him, I said, you know, you have to hit everything separately. You can't mesh all the issues into one, because then it gets jumbled up, and now you have disagreements within your own faction. So you just have to say, I'm a ride for all black people.
That's right.
Wrong or right, for right now,
that's
I'm a ride for every black person, or not every black person, but at least every black situation that needs to be rode for. And just no matter if it's gay, straight, you're feminist, you're a male chauvinist, whatever it is, just ride for it. And then once we get to that point where we have a little bit of the power we need, and once we have a little bit of, you know, push, then we can say, okay, what's next on the agenda? All
right,
let's get these sisters the equality they need. Okay, let's make sure we get the gay people the equality they need. But we can't do it all at one time. So that's what causes a lot of these back and forth and these, like you said, these verbal sparring. So, I mean, it's crazy, but, you know, I hope that with people seeing what's going on and plays like the, Stokely Carmichael and things of that nature, people really understand that. Like, the civil rights movement and all those movements were effective because it wasn't about separate ideas within that that whole organization.
Right.
It was about that organization moving as one.
It was about the freedom of our people. Period. That's why the brother said black power. He didn't say black man power. He didn't say black female power. We said black power. Us for us to be self-sufficient, to mobilize as a whole. We're part of the same family. And then some people would come in and interject some of that. I would hear some folks, well, yeah, but the brothers are trying to be male-dominated. And when I hear that, let me tell you something. I immediately think of white supremacists implanting that in somebody's mind, in some of our folks' minds. Because if anybody knows anything about the Black Power movement, specifically about the Black Panthers, majority of the folks that was part of that, 70% were female. The movement would have stopped dead on a dime were it not for our sisters.
And I also think, and for me as a black woman who is a lesbian, I think there's a piece of me that always kind of feels I'm accepted, but not 100%. So I can ride for your cause. So I can Black Lives Matter all day. I can go to Trayvon all day. I could post a status about that and be like, who ride with me? But if it's something that involves gay rights, and it could be me because you love me or you love the person, you know, everybody got gay auntie, uncle, friend, whatever the case may be.
Right, absolutely.
I think it becomes a different story. And I think we also need to recognize Africans, gay African Americans in the movement are not new. So
right,
if you're not familiar with Bayard Rustin, I would please Google him, as well as Miss Angela. And there's a, you know, a plethora of other within the movement, within the Harlem Renaissance, you know, just within our culture. So it has to be a time. It has to be a time where we see it, because I know everyone wants to, like you guys say, in a black community, you chastise for something. So either you went to church, but you're too holy, or you gay, or you too loud, or you look like a thug, or whatever the case may be. It's just we have to come to a time where we have to put all of that to the side and sit down and be friends and talk about it, agree to disagree sometimes, because we not always going to agree. We human.
Absolutely.
That's okay.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So when we talk
about
things, I don't need people to be, you know, be like, I agree with you 100%. So let's take the LGBT community in this case. You may not agree that it's right or that they should get married. I'm not asking for that. All I'm asking for is the way you want to be treated equally, I would appreciate the same. And the way I hold hands with you, you would do that with me. And I think that goes for everything. We make fun of black nerds. We make fun of all types of things.
That's right.
You know what I'm
saying?
So we just have to embrace it all, because it's all, you know, needed. So I really
I just feel, I'm going to cut you off, but it's like, it's important for everyone to the back and forth on Facebook and Twitter and all this other places always baffle me, but I don't think people understand the purpose of conversation when it comes to these topics. The conversation should always be a conversation to build and destroy. Destroy the negative, build up the positive. So if someone's speaking about something that they're trying to build up, there's no need for you to come into the conversation with a destructive mindset. Right. If we're talking about something that needs to be destroyed, then you can bring that mindset in, talking about, okay, well, this is how we can get rid of black-on-black crime. We want to destroy that. You know what I mean?
Right.
We need to destroy. So if someone's speaking about that, you don't have to come along and say, well, if we would, if yeah, people would do this and people would do that and just start attacking the other. No. Bring to me how you feel we could really actively stop it. And really do something about it on the ground. Other than that, it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, hopefully people will understand that these conversations and these debates, they're fine, but let's have an end game. You know, let's have let's have a goal. Let's have something we're trying to accomplish in the conversation. Let's not just sit here and say, I'm smarter than you.
Yeah.
You know? So,
which is most of the time, that's what it's about. Just like how some of our best and our brightest, they love to have these debate tournaments where they, you know, charge the people to come out to watch them go back and forth to show how smart they are compared to the next person. Okay, that's fine. Now, at the end of all that, after that whole two-hour debate, how did the community become better? Do you understand what I'm saying? You know,
yeah,
how did the community become better from that? From me, from you charging $20 to $30 to watch y'all debate, okay, and that's great. Hey, the brothers, they own it. Okay, now how do the community become better? How do we bring about unity? You know, because a lot of times at the end of some of those debates, you have to keep the two people apart because they're about to fight, and they're two groups about to fight each other. you know what I mean? So, I mean, what is, like you said, what's the end game? When we come together and we're having these discussions, we need to have, first and foremost, the rise of each other. I need to come in and maybe I'm going to be able to learn something from this brother. Maybe I'll be able to learn something from this sister. Hopefully they'll be able to learn something from me. Hopefully they'll, you know, and then together we'll rest on the things that we agree with to help all of us get to the next level. But we can't do that if we're already coming in with anger, with bitterness, with all this pain, which I guess, you know, when you come out of slavery, when you come out of American terrorism after slavery, okay, you know, which we're still in, you know, all that trauma that's within all of us. Hey, man, I mean, that's a hell of a thing. So I guess it would be kind of difficult. That's why, you know, people in the nation, you got to be patient with our people because our people are in so much pain, you know, and we're still getting whips on our backs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think that this is the time where we have to be our own therapists because through the pain, if some of us or many of us that are fighting through making a way out, whether, you know, it's through revolution, whether they're a celebrity giving back to their community or just, you know, making it to college, it just empowering themselves, and we have to use these tools to give back. And kind of like how you were saying earlier, Sean, you know, like a lot of times we don't give back into our community. So take the Asian community, they buy in their community. I believe I was watching a documentary where they talked about they spend their money, their dollar goes over three times in their own community before it even goes out into another community. So they have it packed. So, like, even for me, D.C. always amazes me, and I never knew that Chinatown had an Asian section or sector of police until I worked at the Urban Outfitters. And I was like, why are all these policemen Asian? And I could not understand it. And I was like, I don't get this shit. And somebody was like, well, you know, we are in Chinatown, and they have their own precinct, station or area, whatever, you
That's
know.
Right.
I'm not a police officer, so I'm not what it's called, but they have that, and they police and govern themselves. So it's to
That's
the
right.
point that they have built their community to
to be self-sustained, and because don't nobody need them, they're able to control their area, whether you want to call it turf, land, whatever the case may be, so they control who represents them, who polices them, and they take care of all of that. And that's why the Asian community is one of the lowest communities also to vote. They don't give a fuck because they're not worried for nobody else to save them. And I think that's what we have to realize as Black people. Like, I understand we are hurt, we are wounded. People in general, people go through things that you are hurt and wounded from, but just in life, like, you have to get up and you have to learn from those things. You might, you know, lean on a brother or sister for a little help, but you got to get up and keep moving. Like, we have to do that too. And if we keep waiting for somebody to save us, whether it be a Black president, in which after 8 years, y'all learn that nigga still can't save us, whether you want to call him my nigga, the nigga, that nigga,
we
all love him, but, you know, it's just at the end of the day, he's not going to be able to save us. So it has to come a time where we all get together. So, I appreciate having guests like Sean and everyone else that we've had, because it's getting the conversation going. After this show, somebody will Google something, whether you Google Bayard Rustin, whether you Google Stokely Carmichael, go to the show, like, just take the step to grab a friend and be like, let me see what this hitting on. Like, it is what it is. Half the time, these plays are cheaper than two IMAX movies or two 3D movies that you can wait to see on Netflix.
I had a brother say, well, how much tickets? I was like, yeah, about $15, $17. I get a discount. See, brother, you would spend almost $100 just to go out and stand around at a club. Stand around in a club. Okay? But you won't spend, brother, $17. That's actually cheaper than some drinks.
It's cheaper than the movie.
You
best to pay that money. We gonna spend $30 at the concession stand.
Right, and that's why I gave that example. Like, it's the most pragmatic example. But like at this point in time, movies, like, you can't even take a young lady, a man, whatever you want to take, whoever, to a movie and dinner for less than $100, unless you got some Groupons or some coupons.
Right.
Exactly. I'll say one thing too, like. People have to understand, our people and all people, but we have to really understand, like, the words are fine. Like, the words, like you said, starting the discussions, getting the issues out there is important, but your walk, your action is more important than anything in the world you can do. And it's not always just about standing on the street, you know, holding a sign up or having a speech on the corner. It's just how you live. If you really want to affect change and you want to affect the future, the manner in which you live resonates. People who know you, who follow you, will see that and will say, man, I want to emulate that. That's cool. It's so many people. Like, even for example, I want to start my own businesses. I've been trying to run my own businesses. I've been trying to do my own thing. And my niece sees me all the time. And she said, well, you know, I want to do that. I want to have, like, my own, you know, my own makeup business or whatever the case may be, because she sees that it's possible to do, because she sees me doing it. It wasn't my aim at first to for that to happen, but once I seen that I was being watched, it gives me more inspiration. So the way in which you live, you know, if you're a giver, if you're somebody who goes out and you feed the homeless, if you go out and you do speak out at these events, if you do go out and you support Black culture, trust and believe the people who are around you, who are under you as kids and things of that nature, they will see that and they will emulate that, and you'll have more people like that. So if you want to bring about change, you have to be the change. You have to that walk as well as you talk.
Right.
So it's very important.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think also that goes along with that. People have to realize everyone has a role. So you may not be able to march and make every protest, or you may not know how to garden, so you may not be able to build a community garden, but do what it is that you do know. For me, for example, that's why I created YBE Radio. Like, I know for me, I'm good with my mouth. I think I am witty, a little funny. I can talk. I like talking to people, and I know I can find people because I know people that are moving and doing things. So for me, I feel like that's my role in the movement is connecting, spreading the word. Now, when I can get to a protest and I'm not working 40-plus to 50-plus hours a week, I will be there.
Right.
And if I can make it to an event, you know what I'm saying, I will do that. But best believe if I can't, I will try to donate something or I will spread the word. Like, just use the means that you can. If you are an actor or a playwright and you can make something amazing that will turn on a light bulb in people's heads, or you're like Keith that could write a song like our intro and have you thinking about, damn, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just your talent for that. And I will say that in 2016, I am proud to see people doing it. My timeline makes me proud every time I log on as I filter and remove people that no longer need to be there. But it's just people out here, black youth and young adults doing things, starting networking companies, starting clothing apparel, whether it's to bring consciousness or, you know, homeschooling and teaching others how to homeschool with African, you know, principles and stuff like that. So it's just everyone can do something. Just, you know, take what you know and run with it. You don't have to be Albert Einstein. You don't have to be Malcolm X. You don't have to be the smartest. You don't have to be the brightest. You know what I'm saying? But there's a role for you, and there's always something that you can do.
There's genius in everybody. There's genius in everybody. You just need to find out what that thing is that you're a genius at and contribute. That's all. You come on in and contribute. You contribute and do something for yourself, of course, but do something for your people. You know what I mean? And when each individual can do that, and they really fall in love with what they're doing and fall in love with themselves, they'll be filled with love that will be able to spill out to others. And Lord knows our community needs that. We need the love of self more so than some president, some other group of people. We need the love of self and just spread that. You know, one of the reasons why we have so much conflict is because of that. We're lacking that. You know, and we see the world and how the world views us. But never mind how the world views us. It's about how we view ourselves. You know, that's the most important thing. And once we're able to go ahead and tap into that, then not only will we see what we see now with different individuals, different groups moving, slowly moving in that direction of being self-reliant and self-sufficient, but it'll even happen much faster. It'll happen much faster. Mm-hmm. It's so cliche to say it's just about the love. You got the love. But that's the key. You have to have knowledge of self first. Once you have knowledge of self, then you will have love. You ain't going to love something you don't know. you know what I mean? You got to know self. Then you'll fall in love. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to have that solidarity. Because, like, oh, man, you know, this is what I am. This is what we are. This is what we can do.
No. Yeah, and you have to build with each other. And it's like, and most, I don't know if people know this that listen in, but I did audio work on the Power Stokely play, for the Power Stokely play, rather.
That's right.
And that's how me and the brother met. And, you know, at first I really didn't think much of it. I was like, okay, we're just recording some vocals for a play. And, you know, it's another day at the office, you know. Once he came in there and I heard what was going on, I became more and more intrigued. And I was like, yo, I got to go there. Like, not only I want to finish this and make it beautiful, I want to go there. And I was there. I don't know if I made it open tonight. I think I did, though. It might have been open tonight or the day after. And I will tell you, like, it meant a lot to me just seeing it, knowing that I had 2%. You know, of what that was about. You know what I mean? And my father came out, and he saw my name in the flyer. He's like,
that's right.
Well, you know your name in here? Like, no. I didn't expect my name to be in there. But it was beautiful, and it's like
that's
it inspired me to keep on doing it. Me and Brother Mashawn have been working since. And, you know, my father has been intrigued about it since. He's been looking for plays of the nature since. So it's always little steps. You know, it's always little things, but and it's things you don't even realize are going to happen. So we just have to, like you said, love, embrace, and most importantly, build with one another. And we'll be just all right.
I'm telling you, we will. You don't have to worry about
it. For sure, and I'm going to just throw this. I'm
going
to just throw this plug in here real quick, too. Y'all make sure y'all go to capitalfrench.org. The show is Saturday, July 9th. At 2:15, there's a show that's opening. Tuesday the 12th at 6:45. Saturday the 16th at 4:45. Wednesday the 20th at 8:45. And Saturday the 23rd at 6 p.m. So there's an array of days. There's an array of times. You know what I'm saying? So there's some opportunities for you to get in. As Brother Michon said, the tickets are not expensive. You know what I'm saying? So you can go in there, get out, and have some time to talk about it. If you want to hit the club afterwards, you can do that too. You know what I'm saying? So just please make sure you guys kind of check that out. So I definitely did want to make sure that the people did have the times and kind of the dates. And then we can kind of go back to the election and everything that we were kind of talking about before.
Yeah, we'll you get me on that subject, but I'll be there all day. start talking about that clown show, starting with Trump and his foolishness, which I just
I noticed that both of the assassination attempts or the disturbances have not come from African Americans nor anybody of Spanish descent, and it's funny that we are the common target amongst everybody claiming that we're the target or we're the threat. But both times somebody has disrupted or really tried to take him out, it's been a white thing. So it's hilarious to me.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, and of
know,
course, again, he won't be a terrorist.
Right, of course.
They're already
exactly.
calling him mentally ill. You know,
he's
so they're already
ill,
calling him mentally ill.
Mentally ill lone wolf.
You know, I think it's always that mentally ill lone wolf. And please understand that I get that there are people that are mentally ill, and mental illness is no joke. However, the fact that is only used by the media when it is one white man killing a rack of motherfuckers, and only, like I said, white man, because if he is a brown man, he is either illegal or Muslim. If he is a black man, he is usually a thug. But then when the white man is white, he's a lone wolf that has mental issues, as if no other race has it. One, as if crazy has a race. Like, that shit trips me out all of the time, because literally I don't think anyone could probably go back and find where they talk about a black person, an Asian person, or a Spanish person, and they use the word mentally or the words mentally ill, lone wolf.
Right.
Like, that shit has not happened.
No. Yeah, they have their words. For their characters, these cast of characters, you know, these white extremists that come out and do these horrific things, we label you this, you know, because when I label you like a mentally ill lone wolf, you're still in the category of a human being, because human beings have mental problems and mentally ill, and they'll do it on their own, their selves. I did it myself as a human being, as opposed to this blanketed term, oh, he's terrorist, oh, he's this, or he's that, you know, he's a nigga. They won't say that. They'll call you a thug, you know what I mean? And just put you in this, you know, they just remove the humanity from you. And just label you as a monster, as a thing, as this thing to be feared. This animal, this wild animal, and that's what bothered me so much. Like Brother was talking about with the gorilla, and they shot the gorilla, and then next thing I turn around, look at the social media, and I see all these memes of these gorillas and. The prayer service, and somebody actually put together a whole eulogy for the gorilla, equating the gorilla to maybe one of our brothers or sisters that got killed, and they have the eulogy. And so, see, that's what I mean. You can't expect anybody on this planet to respect you unless you respect yourself.
And I mean, it was coming out in rows. And they had one person, I put up a meme of three monkeys with lipstick on, talking about, and the funeral went crazy when the, I don't know, the so-and-so sisters broke out into a near my God to be. I mean, and I'm looking at the people just laughing. And can't you take a joke? No, fool. Can't you see what's happening? Can't you see that these people are back applauding, saying, see there? See, we don't have to do anything. They do it themselves. They tear themselves down. And they don't even realize how beaten down that they are. They'll you know, cloak it under the guise of, oh, we're just being funny. You can't you take a joke? No. It's actually very tragic and sad. Because then you wanna tear off the head of somebody, right? If they outright called you a monkey, like they called our sister Michelle. And constantly have been calling that sister an ape, a monkey, subhuman, calling Brother Barack, all of that. And then we turn right back around with our damn stupid ways and we'll put something like that out there. Something is wrong. And what that is, brothers and sisters, that is nothing more than white supremacy at its finest, because there's nobody out there necessarily saying it. You're doing it yourself. So that,
right.
Yeah, that devil, that demon is sitting up in you. So in the nation, we said the white man is the devil. Well, you know, you dig deeper into that theology, that white man don't necessarily mean a white individual with that spirit, that mind, that demonic spirit sitting up in you, black man, black woman, for you to sit up there and applaud that and celebrate that and laugh at that. And we
right. And
sitting up here, all our brothers and sisters that have died because of that, to stand up for you.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I get some people, you know, a joke is a joke, but I don't think that people sometimes understand the implications of it. So my thing is, if you want to joke around with people, it's not a problem with that. But if you're going to put out a joke that you may want to put out to the world, you have to understand what's going to come with that and the implications that come with that. And I think that also happens when you have a platform, whether you are a celebrity or, you know, today with social media and all of that. Like, I don't think people understand what you say. At this point in time, once it hits the internet, you can't take it back. You can delete the comment, but we're in an age of screenshot that where when the screenshot is already taken, you're already putting that negative energy out there. So, it's, you know, you're in a world where you cannot take back the things that you say, because people have what people like to call 2016 receipts. So you can say what you want to say. You can say, I'm not racist, or I don't feel this way, or I'm a righteous black man, but if someone can pull up your Facebook or your Instagram where you're demeaning your sisters or your mothers or whatever the case may be because you think it's funny and you think it's cute, but you don't understand also the mental implication that that has and how you are probably systematically affected by that shit, it makes no sense. So all I'm saying is, if you are going to joke, there's an appropriate time for that. If you're a comedian, knock yourself out.
Right.
That's okay. Y'all get a pass because that's what you do. But if you are going to make a statement or a joke or whatever the case may be, you just have to be prepared for the implications that come with that.
It just really revealed, that side of us that really don't feel like, and I talk about it in the play, that we are really beautiful. This, that thing deep down within us that we will tell ourselves and we believe, I'm not beautiful. I'm ugly. This is the reason why we will spend billions on hair products and beauty products, billions, Brazilian weave, and give it to this man who despises us, who hates our guts, but he'll take our money, and he's glad to take our money, and he's glad that we think of ourselves as subhuman, as ugly, unloving, undesirable creatures. And so we put it out there, and we'll have those memes out there. I saw that. I saw it was, and it was just like one person. It was like a whole plethora, and people laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, my people really do think that they're ugly. My sisters, my beautiful sisters, will take their hard-earned money and will drop $300, $400. what's this to say, to maintain this, I'm dropping $400-$500 to maintain this hair. When you don't need that, sister, you don't need to waste all your money. You already have the crown. You're the queen. You're the only woman on the planet whose hair comes out like that. On the planet, you're the only one. So in the play, I said, should the queen's crown be the same as the duchess? Hell no. No, yours stand out. You are the symbol of beauty. You are at the top. What do you look like trying to downgrade yourself to someone who can't even hold a candle next to you? And that's what that's I saw that. I saw that. The brother, you tall, dark, and handsome. That ain't talking about no white boy. That's talking about you, black man.
Mm-hmm.
That's talking about you, black woman. You don't. And
there's nothing.
When I saw that, that struck me to the core, and I was like, "This is not a joke. This is serious."
Mm-hmm. And I would like, and just kind of to add on that, what I noticed, you know, just in my 31 years of life, there's nothing more fearful to white America and really most of the world than a confident black man or black woman that stands tall and is confident in how they walk and confident in how they talk. So just we got to work on, as Brother Sean said, uplifting each other so we're all that confident. So if some of us that are comfortable enough to seek that knowledge, if they don't know, ask questions or whatever, but we all got to do that. We all have to dig a little bit deeper, because until we find ourselves beautiful, well, no one do that, you know. And I hate to be cliche,
right,
but it's on a human level. The same way, you know, the therapists say or the books say, if you can't love yourself, nobody else will love you. It goes with us. We have to love ourselves. We have to respect ourselves for our differences, whether the nose is wide or the hair is crinkly or whatever the case may be, or the booty is big or whatever it is.
Right.
The world is trying to look like us. Meanwhile, we're trying to look like them. And that's on a whole another show we could probably go into about black people and beauty products and the epidemic of Africans currently now in West Africa bleaching their skin to become lighter.
Right.
We can go on about black beauty, and that's a whole nother episode, but I know we will talk for a whole nother hour and a half. I do want to say thank you, Michonne, for calling in tonight. And we are going to kind of wrap this up this evening. And it was an amazing conversation. I've been seeing tweets about it and Facebook posts. So people are talking and people are hearing what we're saying and what you're saying. And again, everybody that's listening, please make sure to check out Power Stokely Carmichael at the Capitol Fringe Theater in D.C. You can hit Michonne up on Twitter or Facebook. Basically, any social media you can find him on. If you look up Michonne L, you'll find him. If you check out YB or Young Black and Empower's website, you'll have all of that information. But please make sure you check it out, because it's definitely worth being there. And I know I will be attending one of the shows coming up. Keith will be there. So if you want to meet up with us, talk about it, y'all want to go along or whatever the case may be, please let us know, and we'll make sure we go with you, got a friend or something, so that you can experience this. So again, I do want to thank you, brother, so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, sis. I really appreciate it. And I'm so happy to be on the program with my brother here. That's just wonderful. I'm so glad.
Yeah, it's been too long, man, and now that you're back, we must connect and continue to build. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. Thank you for coming, brother. Bianca, always a pleasure to host with you.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
thank
you guys as well. Check our page for our updates for the next shows. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Have a good night, y'all.
All right, y'all. Take care. Peace.